Hi, everyone. I have my first overseas Skype to Philip Mantle. How you doing, Philip?
Good evening, Martin. I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And I saw some information on your book coming out, and it's about the alien autopsy and your research in it. And you were there from the very beginning when that came out, is that right?
That's correct. I mean, I was first contacted by the film's owner, which is a chap by the name of Ray Santilli, way back now in 1993, you know, a good couple of years before the film ever surfaced on television. So it was right there from the very beginning and right in the thick of it all the way through.
Wow, wow. And so you had to keep quiet about it for 2 years?
Well, basically what happened was I was press officer for the British UFO Research Association, and we'd had a letter from Ray Santilli's company asking if we'd be interested in helping with a UFO documentary. So I telephoned him. He was in London. I live 200 miles north of London. And we had a few polite conversations. And over the course of a couple of months, he went on to say, well, actually, Philip, I have film of the UFO crash at Roswell. And not only that, the creatures that were autopsied. So what I did in those days, this is the days before email and Skype, I quoted what I could remember from our conversations with Santilli, and I informed a small number of people, both here in the UK and in the United States and one or two other places, privately, you know, keep this under wraps, but here we have this gentleman whom I've never met. He runs this company, and this is what he's claiming. So I didn't go public with it, but I did keep a number of close colleagues informed of what Ray Santilli was claiming at that time.
So can you tell the listeners how you got involved and how this whole thing came about, please?
Absolutely, Martin. I mean, you know, I kept asking Ray Santilli to show me the film. And he said, yes, I can, no, I can't, yes, I can. So this went on until early 1995, and out of the blue, I was sent a videotape of a UFO movie for review purposes only, and it prompted me to ring Ray Santilli. I rung him out of the blue and said, "Look, do you still claim to have this film?" And he says, "Yes, but you don't believe me, Philip." I said, "Well, I can't believe you until I actually see it." So he said, "Arrange an appointment with my secretary. Come to London and see it," which I did. So over a period of a couple of months in early 1995, I viewed the film, several films actually, in Ray's office in London. I was also the conference organiser for the British UFO Research Association. I had a conference already planned, all the speakers booked for August of 1995 in the city of Sheffield in the north of England. And before anyone knew anything about the alien autopsy film in the public, a colleague of mine who lives in Sheffield was also a local journalist. And he rang me and said, I'm writing a thing for my local newspaper, Philip. Give me a couple of quotes about your conference now, and we'll run a bigger piece, you know, nearer the time. So I did. I told him about, we've got two Russian scientists and someone from this country coming, someone from America. Oh, and by the way, the alien autopsy film. That went out. A couple of days later, I got a phone call from a press agency in Sheffield saying, is this true? And I said, yes. They asked me a little bit more information, which I gave them, because I didn't know an awful lot myself. I'd only just, you know, recently seen the films. The next thing I knew, the telephone just went absolutely crazy. The fax machine went berserk. You know, I was getting telephone calls and faxes from both researchers and, you know, media outlets are literally around the world. And all I could do with most of them is just pass them on to Ray Santilli. They couldn't find him, but I had his phone number. And that's how it eventually came out. It was purely by coincidence, Martin. There was no marketing campaign in situ. There was nothing planned. And it took us all completely by surprise. I remember one gentleman ringing me and said he'd been trying to get through to me for 3 days on the telephone.
Wow.
And he said, why don't you have another telephone line put into your house? And I said, well, that's great, but I can only answer one telephone at a time. It doesn't make any difference how many phones I have.
Uh-huh. So,
you know, that's how it came about, Martin. It was purely by luck.
Wow. As you point out in your book, and you know, this is a spoiler alert, the film is a hoax. Now, we're not going to end the podcast here because there's so much more involved, because this thing went, in today's words, viral around the world, and it received tons of press. And the amazing thing about it is nobody panicked like the government fears, or the rumor is the government fears that people will panic if they knew there was life on other planets visiting us. But anyway, can you start to tell about the process on uncovering? This took you, what, 10 years to...
It took me longer than that, Martin. I mean, basically, when I first saw the film in Ray Santilli's office, I just thought to myself, we need to get this out into the open. And, you know, Ray Santilli had no plans to do that at the time. And the only thing I could think of there and then was, will you show it at our conference? I didn't expect him to say yes, but he did. So my idea, Martin, was let's get this thing out in the open. And then not just me, but anyone can see it and can investigate it. It's not behind closed doors. It's not controlled. You know, you have the film there. You can look at it. You can scrutinize it. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it was shown on television, on Fox in the United States and many, many other networks around the world. It was indeed viral. I mean, email had just started in the 95s, and you know, the internet was still in its infancy compared to today.
Mm-hmm.
And it went absolutely mad. So I worked with colleagues both here in the UK. A good friend of mine became a good friend of mine, Mark Center, in the United States. A gentleman by the name of Odd Gunnar Rode over in Norway. Maurizio Biata in Italy, and a whole lot more, Michael Hesselmann in Germany. We were sort of a loose team, if you like. There was no official connection between us all. We all were just determined to try and get to the bottom of the alien autopsy film. And it started as soon as it was broadcast on television. We had the film. Right, let's see what we can do with it.
Now, I saw a TV production that showed the film, and then they also had a person that was a filmmaker come in that did special effects and things like that. And he was going on and on and how it would be almost impossible to make that film and how expensive it would be and all that. And at that point, I believe that most people were believing that the thing was right.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a, before it was released to the general public, for example, there was a private screening of the film in London, and it was an invited audience only. An American researcher who was also an airline pilot by the name of Kent Jeffrey. I managed to get Kent an invitation, and he was convinced there and then that he could prove the film a fake. However, when he later wrote about the film and its various discrepancies, he was convinced it was a real film, Martin. Not a special effects recreation, but the film of perhaps a deformed, deceased human being. So it was still a real film in that effect. Some of the criticisms that he made of the film, you know, proved to be inaccurate. However, you know, he still believed it was a real film, and that, you know, there's no filmmaker or film studio or special effects artist had made it, that it was a real cadaver that you saw on the slab. And he was one of the biggest critics in the early days. But again, that's exactly what I wanted, was to get this film out into the open.
Mm-hmm.
And people then could scrutinise it. That included the special effects experts, also the medical profession. I mean, if this was an autopsy or a dissection, call it what you will, then surely one of the branches of science you take it to look at is the medical profession. And I have to be honest, you know, again, the loose band of colleagues that I've mentioned, between us, we showed it to an awful lot of physicians and pathologists and surgeons, many of whom were very impressed with it. They wouldn't commit themselves and say, yes, it's definitely an alien that's on the slab. they commented on the various techniques used by the so-called surgeons on the film, that they were accurate. And, you know, they were quite impressed from that point of view. The special effects artists were critical by and large. And, you know, they claimed it could be made this way and that way. Just so happens my best friend here in England has worked in special effects all his life. And he's worked on some huge, you know, movie productions. And he said, yes, you can make it this way, but you can also make it that way. There was no hard and fast way that you could make something like this. You know, there was certain basics. But the thing about the special effects angle, Martin, certainly here in the UK, I mean, the film industry is very small here. And special effects is even smaller compared to, you know, Hollywood and so on. Mm-hmm. And someone would say, well, I think it's this particular gentleman. It has the signature of his type of work. I would find this guy and I'd ring him and photo or write to him or whatever. No, it's not me, but I think it's him. So I'd go to him, whoever he was, and he'd say, no, it's not me, but I think it's him. And you know, I never got the same name twice. Basically, none of them knew if it was a special effects recreation or not. They all suspected it maybe, but they couldn't point the finger at anyone in particular. And then, you know, my colleagues did that overseas. I can't mention any names, but there was one sort of world-renowned special effects expert that was contacted and said, did you make it? And he went absolutely ballistic. He was going to threaten lawsuits and all kinds of things. You know,
A little bit of an ego there, huh?
Well, you know, the accusation has been made, so we felt duty-bound to follow it up. Didn't put any credence to it. But again, that's what we wanted, Martin, is get the film out in the open, you know, and you know, the various experts could look at it from whatever angle they liked and say, well, it seems, you know, it seems okay, or that, you know, there's problems with it. The thing about the film, when you look at it, there's nothing that jumps out from the screen immediately to say it's a fake. You know, the clock on the wall is circa 1947. The telephone is, it's on the wall. The medical instruments are all, you know, from that era. You know, the surgeons aren't wearing a digital watch, for example. There's no one thing that gives it away. So purely from a visual point of view, it looks okay. You know, again, the surgical techniques seem to be consistent with that era. You know, that's borne out by the various quotes we got from the medical profession. So there was nothing obvious. However, it was one special effects company in the United States called the Really Dangerous Company who first, you know, didn't just give a blanket statement and say, oh, we can do that. They actually looked at the film frame by frame and then spotted a little what we call bloopers. I don't know if you use that word in the States, but a little error that only a special effects guy could perhaps recognize, or if someone who was, had enough patience to sit down and play the film so slowly. So they made a little list of these inaccuracies, if you like, and I printed that out, sat in front of the TV, and literally, you know, had this piece of paper in front of me. They tell you where to look and at what time. And lo and behold, there was a few little discrepancies in there. For example, one of them was where the surgeon's actually sawing the skull open, the head wobbles. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't, if it's attached, you know, to your spinal cord, it shouldn't wobble. And you see the surgeon put his hand on top of it just to hold it steady. So it looked like it wasn't attached properly. You know, in other words, it was an effect. There was lots of other little tiny things, but this happened, you know, literally for a second or so. So when you viewed the film at normal speed, you didn't really notice that. So, you know, the seeds of doubt had then been set in. But this, of course, I think was a couple of years down the line from the film coming out. It wasn't instantly. You had to be sufficiently interested, Martin, to do that. You know, it wasn't something you could spot straight away. So, you know, and on we went, and that's how it began. You know, there was some little indiscrepancies, let's start from there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Has it ever been actually attributed to a special effects company?
Good question. Not a special effects company, no. Years went by, literally years. And we got nowhere. You know, we've got these little discrepancies, but we couldn't find a special effects company or an artist or anything. And then I wrote an article about the film for a newsstand magazine here. And I got an email from a chap, said, I didn't know there was still any interest in this film. Hey, we're talking, I don't know, 10 years now after it had been on TV. And this is a chap called Simon. And he said, my friend made the dummies for it. Are you interested? Of course I'm interested. So anyway, kind of long story short, Martin, I went to meet this chap. And he wouldn't tell me who his friend was to begin with. But he gave me some idea of his credentials. And he wasn't a special effects artist. He was actually a sculptor whose work from time to time had overlapped into the film industry. So all this time we'd been looking for a special effects artist and we were looking in the wrong direction. And again, shortening the story, he eventually gave me enough information for me to identify who this individual was. Now, when the alien autopsy film was first shown on television in the United States on Fox, the producer of that show was a gentleman called Bob Kiviat. Now, I'd kept in touch with Bob down the years, and I gave Bob this contact we'd got, and between us, we managed to find who the man was, and his name is John Humphreys. John is a highly trained a sculptor in his own right, and he made the dummies. We tracked him down. He kind of admitted it, you know, without going public. We were working on a possible TV expose, and John kept mentioning someone else's name. He kept saying, you need to speak to Spiros. But we never got a surname. And John then was signed up to work on the movie version of Alien Autopsy. That was made here in the UK. I don't think it was ever released in the cinema in the United States. I think you can buy it on DVD. So he would then had to sign a contract for that and wasn't allowed to speak to us anymore. But having said that, I contacted the film company he was working for, and eventually one of their executives confessed, if you like, accidentally probably, and just said, yes, John's working on this movie for us, and he also made the dummies for Ace Antilles' Alien Autopsy film. You know, so they confirmed what John had earlier been telling us. But he wouldn't go public with it at that point. So there was this Spiros, this name called Spiros. Who was Spiros? And again, a colleague and I made a little DVD of some interviews with people involved. And out of the blue, in 2007, we got a call from Spiros. His name was Spiros Malaris, originally from Cyprus. But that's his parents were. He was born here in the UK. And he said, I am the man that led the team that faked the alien autopsy. Mm. And he filled in all the blanks. He told us everything, chapter and verse. His reason for contacting us and deciding to go public with his story was that he'd had a personal disagreement with Ray Santilli and his business partner and decided enough was enough. And the truth must now be told. And, you know, Spiros Malaris is the man who faked the alien autopsy film. And John Humphreys was a friend and colleague of him, of his, and he hired him to make the dummies. And I can tell you all the story, Martin, if you like. I mean, basically, Spiros, as a young man, was trained as a mechanic. He later trained as a magician. He was always interested in magic and still is. And he then went into film. He used to make pop videos, you know, that kind of thing. So in early 1995, he was going to France to a television conference type thing. It's like the film festival, but for TV over in Cannes. So he got out a media directory and he faxed a number of companies that were close to him saying, look, I'm going over to do some filming with a little crew. We have some spare time. If you're looking to hire a crew, we're available. Again, just by coincidence, one of these companies was the one owned by Ray Santilli. he met Santilli in France, and Santilli told him this story about having alien footage from Roswell and so on. So they arranged to meet back in London, which they did. Santilli showed Spiros a piece of film that's known as the tent footage. It's not been shown on television, but it's the same film that I was first shown. It's about 6 or 7 minutes long. You see a creature on a slab covered by a blanket and a couple of men in white coats with you know, looking like they're handling some kind of flesh. Spiros immediately said, "I'm sorry, Ray, but that has never been shot on film. It's video. It's not been transferred to video. It is video." So Ray came across with his sob story that, you know, he'd originally bought film, but it was no good and he'd lost all his money. So Spiros says, "Don't worry, I will recreate it for you. I will make it. I will do it." And the budget they had to make it was £30,000. They literally built a small set in Spiros's sister's apartment in London. She was having the apartment refurbished. And Spiros's girlfriend did all the medical research, you know, spoke to doctors and morticians and pathologists, got the books out. When they hired in the props, like the surgical equipment and the telephone, and they hired them from different companies and had them delivered to different addresses so they could never all be traced to the same project. Mm. What some people don't know, Martin, is there actually are two separate autopsy films. Only one has been seen on TV. I've seen them both. So they make the first one, and they view it back after they've done it, and Spiros's girlfriend said, "That's a mistake. It was a mistake with one of the medical procedures. If you show that on television, it will instantly be shown as a fake because it's wrong." So, you know, Santilli apparently was almost in tears. So he said, "Don't worry about it. We'll come back tomorrow and we'll do it again." So they'd made a mold for the dummies. They made another one. This time there was a hole in its leg. There'd been an air pocket. So they literally went to the butcher's and got some sheep bones and put that in the knee joint and burnt it, made it look like it was burned as if in a crack, and improvised. They shot it, you know, they played it back. It looked fine. That's the version that everyone has been seen on TV and stills from it in newspapers and magazines around the world. Spiros claims the idea was not to make a load of money, it was just to perhaps get Santilli's money back. And then in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, to hold their hands up and say, "We did it. Aren't we clever? Mm-hmm. Please come and hire us." You know, they wanted to fool the world, to show how good they were at what they were doing. And make no bones about it, Martin, you know, John Humphreys is a world-class sculptor in his own right. But Spiros was the brains behind it in that respect. Santilli was just the front man and the money man. Spiros never made any money out of it. He said, "Right, that's me done. I'm off." You know, he wasn't interested in UFOs. He'd no idea of the amount of interest a film had generated around the world. And every now and again, he'd ask Santilli if he got his money back, and he just said, "No, no, no." And that was it. You know, that was it. And, you know, I've interviewed Spiros. He even made storyboards. He didn't just make a film, he made a story out of it. He even flew to Roswell and flew over the terrain, hired a private plane and, you know, literally took some film of the area just in case. I've seen his research folders that he did at the time. He'd, you know, his faxes from Kodak. They were even planning at one point to film a crashed flying saucer. Mm. And he'd hired a disused go-kart stadium. And they were going to build it in there. And they weren't even going to build a wooden truck, a U.S. military truck, but make it out of wood. And he had a huge folder of all these trucks. And he said, I was even going to put the registration plate of this one on the back of it. So if you check the records, you'll find that was a real truck, you know. And lots more besides. You know, he had his diaries of the time, you know, with little notations in there. So it's a long story, but he filled in all the missing pieces there and then, and you know, and he's only ever spoken once about it in public as Spiros. That was a conference I organised. And I thought it was a brave thing to do. But he, as he pointed out, he said, look, you know, I'm not the guy who sold this and made all the money. I'm not the guy that conned you. I was just, you know, the hired hand, so to speak. Santilli is the man behind it. He's the one that, you know, sold it to the various TV companies and told a pack of lies. I haven't told any lies. I just didn't say anything. But now I am. So, you know, there's no doubt about it. Some people said, oh, it was a simple hoax, but it wasn't a simple hoax. You know, they put a lot of thought into it, a lot of planning. Spiros has a great sense of humour. And you even see bits of that in the film, because for those that's seen it, there's also some debris, some so-called wreckage with symbols on. Mm-hmm. Well, Spiros used ancient Greek. You know, he's of Cypriot origins. So he put Greek symbols on and just altered them a little bit. And if you had looked close enough, which we did, they actually spell freedom. And he thought that was a great name for a spaceship. Wow. If you turn these symbols upside down, it spells out video TV. But, you know, that was a bit of a fluke, but it's just the way it was his little things in there. He thought freedom in Greek, in ancient Greek, was a great word for a flying saucer. He also tells the story of when they'd made the first autopsy film and it was no good. They literally went home and left the creature lying on the slab with its head cut open and all the guts cut open and all the giblets everywhere. When they got there the next morning, they'd actually had a burglar. Somebody had broke into the apartment and stolen a couple of replica bits and pieces. But he said, can you imagine the look on the burglar's face? Open the door. And this thing's laying on the slab with blood and guts everywhere, you know.
So I can't believe they went ahead and stole something instead of just taking off. That's pretty funny.
Well, they stole something from downstairs first before they went upstairs, you know. And he thought, oh, you know, we've been rumbled. Whoever's broke in will tell the authorities. Then he suddenly realized, no, they can't, because they've been burgling the apartment, so they can't tell anyone. And of course, Santilli won't admit any of this. He's told so many untruths that he dug himself into a hole. But, you know, Spiros is not after any money. He just wanted to tell his story. He has considered writing his own book about it, but he's a businessman now, and that's, you know, not on the top of his list of priorities. So he is interviewed pretty much in full for the book. I re-interviewed him again just before the book was published, just to get sort of an update. John Humphreys, you know, has said, you know, yes, it's all correct, pretty much. Although he doesn't want to get involved. He's a quiet fella. He just wants to get on with his work. And, you know, others that were involved, well, have come forward. Not everyone, but more than enough, Martin. And it took, in total, 14 years from my first meeting with Ray Santilli in 1993 to actually saying case closed. It was 2007. So I never thought it would take that long to get to the bottom of anything, you know, and but it did, and I'm glad it did. So that's sort of a potted history of how we managed to track all the main players down, and finally, case closed.
While you were talking about your book, can you go ahead and say the title of it? And by the way, that'll be linked right under this podcast as well.
Yeah, I mean, the book's sort of final closure, as far as I'm concerned. It's called Roswell Alien Autopsy, The Truth Behind the Film That Shocked the World. Because it was, as far as the UFO world was concerned, it was a shock. It polarized groups and individuals. It was the first online UFO battle ever, Martin. I mean, you know, like I said, the internet and email was still in its infancy. The X-Files were doing roaring trade on TV, so it came out at the right time, and it was an absolute battle. There was one gentleman in England who I'll not mention him by name, but he even accused me of being part of it, of being part of the hoax, helping Santilli fake it. And he's never apologised for being wrong, of course. You know, people thought Santilli was paying me huge amounts of money, which is not true. You know, if he did, he didn't tell me where he sent it, because I never got it. And he never offered it. So there was all kinds of wild rumours and allegations. So, you know, some people said, well, why bother writing the book, Philip? As well, I want to set the record straight. Santilli made a movie out of this. You know, he's said so many things that are not true. I also want to do it for UFO research. I mean, research that we're involved in, Martin, sometimes gets a lot of stick. Sometimes justified, others not. They call us all wild-eyed believers, but I wanted to show that, you know, research will follow the evidence wherever it takes. In this case, it ended up with a hoax. You know, a lot of people labelled it as a hoax to begin with, Martin. I mean, that is true, but calling something a hoax and proving it is two different things. You know, if the justice system worked that way, you'd just say, well, he's guilty of murder, go and, you know, send him to the electric chair, and it doesn't work that way. You have to prove it first. Mm-hmm. So I remember sitting down for lunch one day with Santilli in London, and I looked him right in the eye, and I said, Ray, I'll tell you here and now, no matter what it takes, I'll get to the bottom of this film. And he just smiled and just said, that's fine, Philip, no problem. And I meant it, you know, and I didn't think it'd take me that long. I didn't know what the bottom of it was at that time, Martin. There were lots of rumours about what it may be. Some people said it's a science fiction film, you know, the offcuts from some sci-fi film that he's bought or he's been given or whatever. So there was all kinds of different ideas and hypotheses. And I followed them wherever they led. And, it, you know, eventually it did lead to it being a complete hoax. You know, I said from day one, I don't think Santilli, with respect, he's clever enough to hoax this film. And I was right. He wasn't. He put the money up, or him and a colleague, and he didn't hoax it. He got someone else to do it for him, which, when you get to know Ray, that's what his business is. He doesn't make anything himself. His business is basically music. And his company will buy back catalogues or license back catalogues from, you know, from pop artists and groups, and then, you know, relicense them. So there's nothing of his own there. And this was the same. It was someone else's work that he went on to sell and make a ton of money from. So I was kind of right in that respect. But it was a long journey, quite arduous at times, quite funny at times as well. And you know, I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad I got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I am, for everyone's sake. Now, let's talk about Ray Santilli a little bit. Do you have an idea of how much money he made off the film?
I haven't got an exact idea of how much money he made, but I know he made a lot of money. Like I said, Martin, to make the film, it cost £30,000. Mm-hmm. In 1995, that would have probably been about, I don't know, $50,000. A lot of money, I know, but for example, just for the American rights, so the Fox paid him a six-figure sum, about $250,000.
Wow.
So instantly, just with the TV rights with Fox, it's $200,000 up.
Wow. Go ahead.
On top of that, Martin, the first magazine to release stills of it was called VSD in France. They paid him $60,000, and then it was released to 20 or 30 other countries around the world. So they paid him money as well. And then it was the video rights, because when it came out in the States, Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction, it then came out on video later. Of course, Ray got a cut of that. And then, of course, you know, I don't know, 10 to 12 years down the line, he does a movie of it, so he gets more money out of that. So, you know, he's done very nicely out of it. Thank you very much.
It seems like fraud to me. And has anyone ever talked about charging him
somewhere? Yeah, I mean they have, but it would have to be the television companies that he dealt with that would have to do that. I've inquired about it, Martin. It's a civil matter here in the UK, mm-hmm, rather than a criminal matter in that respect. You know, the police cannot go and arrest him for it.
Right.
Let's say you were the head of, you know, Martin Willis Television, and you'd paid whatever amount of money to broadcast it on your network, technically, you could, you know, look at that from a legal point of view. However, you know, the reason you licensed or took an option on that film in the first instance was to make money on it yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's estimated that something like, because it was so popular on Fox that they showed it three times. They added little bits each time and re-showed it. So it's estimated they had a viewing audience of about 30 million.
Wow.
And when it sold on video, it was the biggest selling documentary video of the year. So Fox made its money out of it. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't say they'd been ripped off in that respect. It hasn't suffered any reputational damage as a result. So, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, justifiably why we would do it. Yet it's fraud, but no one lost out. We all made money from it, so leave it alone, you know. So myself and one or two other colleagues have looked at that angle to see, you know, but it would take Fox or someone like that to do that, and that's never happened, and it never will, I don't think, Martin.
Yes. Are you aware of any staunch believers that are saying that you're wrong and the film is still right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have a friend in the United States called Ed Gurman. I traveled to New Mexico in 2007 with Ed, and we drove down through the desert near Socorro, ended up in Roswell at the festival there, and I was fortunate enough to lecture there. And Ed is absolutely convinced it's 100% authentic. Will not believe one word that I say or that of Spiros Malaris. There's a place in the desert which has some oddities about it where we visited, and Ed believes that is the actual crash site of the UFO. I couldn't take you there. Ed can, you know, and again, that's all featured in the book. There are others, you know, I've got to be honest, but and some people think, well, Santilli did see real film and did recreate it. You know, he didn't. It's not Spiros' imagination that he really did see film. So there's a mixture. But, you know, again, what I've done with the book, Martin, is say, look, here's all the research. Here's how the film came out. Here's who saw what. And these are my attempts to get to the bottom of it. I think I have done. But you don't have to believe me. I'm not out to say, you know, indoctrinate anyone. There's a number of possibilities that I mentioned. The film was thought to be a hoax, a human, you know, a deformed human being, some kind of crap propaganda film, etc. You can believe what you want. Here's my research. You make up your own mind. And mine, you know, I didn't. Mine's done. You know, I have no doubt that it's a fake. No such film ever existed. There's no mysterious cameraman who Santilli claimed to have bought it from. He had a film of the cameraman. That's another part of the story, Martin. I mean, basically, Spiros went to Los Angeles and got a bum off the street. You know, an old gentleman who was living rough on the street, put him up in a hotel. You know, here's some money, you know, some food, stay overnight. Here's the camera, you know, keep still. And just read this out.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was supposedly the cameraman's interview. And again, that's all featured in the book. It was just a bum off the streets. But he knows his name. You know, it just so happened he had been an actor in his youth, but had fallen on hard times and became an old drunk, you know. So it's another part of the story. What I've said to just literally today, that the actual story of the hoax and how it was done and how it was made is far more interesting, far more amusing than any untruth spun by Ray Santilli and his colleagues, you know what I mean? It really is, because there's lots of funny little things that happened to them when they were, you know, they used to meet in a cafe to discuss what they were going to do, and, it was just funny. It just really... So what I'd really like to do, Martin, is, of course, is to wrap it all up and finish the Alien Autopsy film how it started, and that's on television. You know, do the final closure on it, little documentary. Here it is. Here's Spiros. Here's all the guys that made it. Over and done with. Whether that will ever happen or not, I don't know. But that would be the icing on the cake.
Right, right. Now, when we first started talking, I was going to ask you why Ray Santilli would want to make this film in the first place, but obviously that's answered. He realized how much money he was going to make out of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can be fair to Ray Santilli, he never made any secret that his only interest in this film was to commercialize it. And in other words, to make as much money from it as he could. He never hid that fact. And like I said, he's made an awful lot of money. And he even made a movie out of it here in the UK. So, you know, he may come up with some other idea. I mean, I haven't spoken to him for years now. He won't have anything to do with me. But
yeah, I wonder why.
He even pitched the idea that Alien Autopsy, the musical. So...
yeah, that's really good with music. Jeez.
Yeah, but nothing would
blood
surprise
and guts.
Me. Yeah, nothing would surprise me. If he saw a commercial angle at it, then he would take it. It's as simple as that. So, you know, if something else did come out that would make him a few more dollars, it wouldn't surprise me. But I think it's pretty much milked now, to be honest. But it was always a money was a motivating factor for Santilli. But for Spiros and his team, it wasn't. They wanted to do this little project that they saw to sort of showcase their talents, both as filmmakers and special effects artists, fool the world, then hold their hands up and say, didn't we do a good job? Do you want to hire us? But that didn't happen. But that was their motivation, not money.
Wow. Well, you've been absolutely terrific. Do you have a website?
My website is beyondroswell.com. All the Alien Autopsy research is on there. There's even a lengthy transcripted interview with Spiros, so you can see pretty much blow by blow. Couldn't put that in the book, it was just too long, so I've condensed it. And of course, the book, Roswell Alien Autopsy, is available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And again, it'll be linked right under this podcast. Well, thank you so much for the filling us in today. It's been a real pleasure and actually entertaining as well.
The pleasure's all mine, Martin, and I wish everyone a pleasant evening.
Do you want to say evening or do you want to say something else?
Well, it's evening here.
Okay, we'll leave it in. Okay. This is Martin Willis with Philip Mantle, and that's it for today.